Did you see my Snapchat this morning?
I haven't looked at Snapchat this morning.
Yesterday on the way home from I was driving back from a wedding, and I stopped at a gas station and they had black water, which I had never heard of before, but I guess it has a bunch of minerals and I don't know, whatever. Anyway, I bought it for the novelty because it looked interesting, and I ended up not drinking it yesterday. So this morning I made coffee out of this black water. It's interesting.
It's probably just tap water. It's probably
No,
just tap water. Water has minerals in it to begin with, so.
you know what it tastes like? It tastes like on like a really hot day, and like you turn on the hose or something, and like you water down some dirt, and like it starts to evaporate, and there's like that really weird like minerally smell. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
That's what this coffee tastes like. I don't know if that's good. I don't know if it's bad. I don't know if it's healthy. I don't know if it's going to kill me, but
Probably all answers are yes.
long week, Callum. You had some interesting weddings going on, huh?
I did. I had a crazy, awesome. There was a wedding going on at Thompson, downtown Toronto. I don't shoot a lot of downtown stuff, so it was nice to mix it up. And then I shot yesterday kind of at the city a little bit. So I've had a busy weekend, but it's a long weekend here, so today's nice.
Yeah, that's funny that you said that you don't really shoot downtown a lot. I feel like me either. And that's one of those things that's weird is like you market yourself as like a this city wedding photographer, and yet like the amount that you actually shoot in the city is pretty
Very low.
rare. It's usually at like, outside locations.
Yep. And what have you been up to this weekend?
Well, this weekend I just finished shooting a wedding for it was great. It was like one of my first weddings that I ever shot was for a bride who just loved me to the moon and back and has been telling all of her friends about me, and I've booked almost a dozen weddings either directly or indirectly through her. So she'll refer a couple to me, and then that couple will refer another couple to me, and then it just kind of branches out. But all these weddings are up in like Chicago, so it just takes Chicago is a great city, but it's like 3.5, 4 hours from me, so there's a bit of a time investment. You got to get a hotel, and I always have a blast, and it's always so much fun seeing all the old couples whose weddings I shot. And it always turns out to be a blast, but this weekend's wedding was really good, really good. But there was one slight downside, and it had nothing to do with the wedding. It's that obviously, if you've been a listener of this podcast, and Callum, as you very well know, I've been trying to branch into something new and creative, and I finally did it. I finally pulled the trigger on a beautiful little 360 degree camera that I am so extremely excited to use, but I ordered it. It was on back order, and I was supposed to get it before this past weekend's wedding, but it showed up the day of the wedding. Literally, as I pulled into the church, I got a notification on my phone from Amazon saying, "Your package has been delivered." So that's just one of those things that it's like, you get this new toy, you really want to play with it, and I'm gonna have to wait for the next wedding. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. I'm excited to play with it and watch it advance. But today we have a an interesting podcast, and I was pretty excited because I remember Craig George was talking about the future of wedding photography, and one of the things that he mentioned was 360. So that was pretty awesome. What do you think, Callum?
My thoughts very clear on this podcast about 360 video or photo.
You're not
No,
even interested in it? Hold on.
not for weddings.
How cool would that be, though? Just like one photo, bring it on in there, middle of the dance floor. Everybody's got like the circle around the bride and groom, and they're just like belting their hearts out. And you can look all around you. How cool would that photo be? Everybody would be in it.
No. I think, okay, that I do. I like as just before you started thinking, I was like, well, when is it appropriate to use it in a wedding? And I thought it'd be very cool if you had like your whole wedding in a massive circle, somehow in a field. What I mean? And then you'd have every guest. That'd be cool, I admit. Even that, what your idea with, dance floor, everyone's belting out a song in one frame. That'd be cool. I'm afraid that it makes people lazy or it becomes a gimmick. And then it destroys what I feel is the heart of photography itself.
No, I think that you're absolutely right. That's definitely the wrong approach going about 360-degree video, is that, you know, this isn't made to make my job any easier. It's not made to, or at least the way that I'm looking at it, is that it's not meant to, you know, okay, so when GoPro came out, and GoPro even now still is touted as like this, like adventure camera, and people buy them because GoPro's marketing is so good, and it, whenever you watch a GoPro ad or commercial, you think, if I had that camera, I would be super adventurous, and that is why I need to buy a GoPro, because I want to get out, I want to do some fun things, right? Like, sure. I mean, usually people get a GoPro and they're like, oh yeah, this is cool, but I'm not really sure what I should be doing with this thing. So then with the 360 camera, I'm not looking at this to set it and forget it, as they say, with the whatever that crazy magical oven thing was. But what I'm looking to do is just add something new that could be valuable to the couple, because I see 360 as taking off. And if I can get on this now, they're still going to be able to have this technology from years from now. And I really want to make like one immersive video. Like I might even, you know, take on a wedding for free. Like I might not even photograph the wedding. Just try to get on in there and just try to show off the capabilities of 360 to be able to edit it all together so that you feel like you're there.
Ray, I think it's time we get into today's guest. Craig George. He's based out of Wales, in a town I can't pronounce, and he is a destination wedding photographer. He is all over the place. If you follow him on Instagram stories, which he's going to tell you how to get to his Instagram in a bit, he is all over the place, having the time of his life, but balances it, you know, to be with his partner and kid often. He is a great inspiration for wedding photography and photography in general. He has a really good outlook on life, on the art. I'm super stoked for everyone to hear the interview. Ray?
Yeah. I unfortunately wasn't able to be here for this episode because, as Callum mentioned, Craig is in Wales, and therefore there's like a 5-hour time difference between us. And with having a 3-month-old and having a 3-year-old, as you've already heard just in this short few minute intro, I get interrupted a lot, and it's just not fair for me to, interrupt a guest. And just with the time difference, I couldn't make it work. This was all my fault. So Callum did this episode all on his own. He did a great job. I know you guys are going to get a lot out of this. And what is really interesting, I really want you guys to pay attention to the gear that Craig uses. Check out his website and then, like I said, listen to the gear, because it's really going to shock you, and in a great way.
It's true. He uses I'm not going to ruin it. I was almost going to ruin it there.
I was like, no, Gal, no, do it, don't do it. Okay. Why don't we just get into the episode then? Let everybody hear it.
That's true. We should just jump right into it.
Here we are with Craig George, a Swansea native, I believe. He might correct me, but he is living just outside Swansea right now. He is a UK and EU wedding photographer doing strictly travel, from everything I can tell. And I think he even says on his own website that nothing happens where he is living, so he travels for all of his weddings. This is Craig. Craig, welcome. Thank you for, you know, taking the time after all the scheduling nightmare. Give us an introduction to yourself, man. Welcome aboard.
Hey, Callum, how are you? You're not so much native. I grew up. I am a destination wedding photographer. That's kind of happened by accident over the last 5 years, and that's not how I set up, but because I live on a coastal city that's very, very small in terms of cities around the UK, let alone the world, it's the demographic is very limited, you know, and being a coastal thing, I haven't got a huge catchment area, so I started looking outside of Swansea, and about 4 years ago, a couple booked me to work in France for their wedding. They were from Bath, and they took me out there. And I got pally with with one of the planners who just happened to be part of a network of wedding planners out in France, all in English speaking, a lot of them from South Wales, so we had an immediate connection, and it's just grown and grown and grown from there. So I kind of become known as a destination photographer rather than carving it out as an intention from the beginning.
So just kind of by luck, you just fell into the travel lifestyle.
Yeah, to a sense. I mean, it wasn't lost on me that the fact I was going out to France and there was a planner involved, that if I said it completely took me from left field, I'd be lying. I hoped for what I was looking for actually happened. So, yeah, the I'm trying to think of the word, the desire to sort of impress the planner, if you like, in the hope that she would then further more work my way, worked a treat.
Well, it's worked, yeah. Tenfold, because you are all over the place. Every time I'm checking out your Instagram stories, you're like somewhere new. You're all over, like, I don't know how you sleep. Do you just sleep on the planes? Do they give you like early check-in to the holding bin and you just sleep in the bins?
You can get, well, it's not early check-in, it's late check-in. So you can get there as within 10 minutes of the plane taking off. It's amazing. But I've just carved out a way that works for me. You know, I sleep well. I sleep for a good 7 or 8 hours a night at least. Otherwise I'm properly grumpy. And if you know me at all, you know that's not really a detraction around. It's not really a step down from where I'm happy normally. I'm usually quite grumpy as a person, but you just learn to travel, and you learn to, there's little things. You know, the first couple of trips were super stressful, and as you experience things and as you do it more and more and more, it becomes almost second nature to you. And I'm very used to spending my nights in hotel rooms and editing on my computer at the same time. But over the last few years, I've built up a lot of connections in the places that I'm going to. So it's usually on a friend's sofa or a friend's spare room, and it becomes a trip to see friends as well as going to work. You know, it's almost not scary anymore.
That's crazy awesome. I think Ray's only done a couple, but I've also done only a few destination based stuff. And, you know, I think I probably by the time it gets to the point where I guess you're doing them, where it's like a normalcy, I was like shitting my pants. I was like, did I forget things? Did I like even bring my tickets to get on the flight? Like, I was like all over the place. I'm pretty sure I landed in Switzerland. I was like, okay, where am I going? I was sweating. You know, we were like, it was like my girlfriend at the time, my now wife, she was, yeah. Catherine, she was there with me, and she wanted to go running in the mountains and stuff. And so we like walked around in like Lausanne for a while, and we're like, okay, I think this is where we're staying. Like, did we get it right? Oh crap, I gotta go tonight to the rehearsal because I'm gonna shoot that. And I'm like, and I'm freaking out because I don't know where I am, you know.
So the second
time was easy.
Yeah, exactly, right? And it is that the only fear I've ever had is that fear of the unknown, or if I haven't got a plan B. And plan B, if I go to far-flung destinations, then it's got to be a few days before in case there's something wrong with the plane, in case there's something out of your control, you know?
Sure.
You've got to allow yourself a bit of time, and that can be quite restrictive if you're busy. But with France, the flight, France, which is, I choose France because it's fairly local. I say that in terms of, you know, destination shooting, it's fairly local. It's only an hour and a half on a plane from here. So it's a day's travel essentially. But if all else fails and the plane decides not to take off, because it's fairly local, I could probably get another flight. And then plan C is that I just drive through the night, which would take about 14, 15 hours worth of driving.
Because you could drive across down London, across the channel.
Yeah, you can go across the Pacific Channel, which will take you straight across. And, I've had to do that twice. Once was this year, actually. And I just drove through the night and arrived because the flight was cancelled. I shot on the...
Oh, no.
So it wasn't my usual route. So I normally fly out of Bristol, and it's really easy, and I get there about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I land about four because we lose an hour, and it's about an hour and a half's drive to where my usual base is for the French weddings in that area in the Dordogne. And but I'd shot on the Friday in the UK. I'd shot a wedding, and I'd booked a late flight with BA out of Stansted to get down to Bordeaux, and then it was the usual drills the other side, and it was all planned out, and it was all fine, as long as everything went to plan. But the flight got cancelled, so I was in the airport, and the flight got cancelled, and it was 10 o'clock at night. And I had to be at a wedding at 11 a.m. the following morning, you know, 1,000 kilometres away. And there's only one thing that you can do, and that's just get in the car and grind it out. But that was always my plan B. I knew that if that flight got cancelled, then I can drive it. And if there's no plan B, I won't take it. It's as simple as that.
You know, right. I wouldn't
risk to that degree. I wouldn't risk it. I wouldn't risk not being professional, you know?
Okay. So, you know, I think as you've gone on, you've obviously, you've got all of your plan A, B, C, D's set up. I want to switch a little bit of gears. I want to go back, I guess, to young Craig. I'm just trying to picture you without like a beard right now, you know?
And hair. It's just the opposite.
And also, you know, if we 180 the beard hair ratio, you know,
yeah.
To young Craig, you know, I guess talk to our listeners a little bit about how you, you know, started or fell into photography or what your journey was. Like, you know, why weddings or why did you pick up a camera in the first place?
Okay. So, I've always had cameras around since I can remember. And I know that sounds a bit cliche, and I never ever considered myself as a photographer, but when I think back, I always had cameras around. And my dad, my father was in the army, and he was a printer in the army. So they had a lot of photography around, right? And I was always immersed in that, and we always had cameras for Christmas, and there was always drawers full of photographs. So I've always had this affinity with it, but I never connected with it at all until I decided to pick a camera up in anger, you know. So I was in the army myself up until 2003, and I met my partner, and I got out at that point and decided to make something else of my life. And I didn't go down photography yet. So this was 2003. I didn't go down photography yet. I started a business that was completely off the cuff, and it was to do with cavity wall and loft installation. And we did all right. And we had sort of 15, 20 staff, and we were going great guns. And I just got bored because I was sat in over a pretentious office doing nothing all day, and there was no creativity whatsoever. And so I decided to take 6 months off. Had a little bit of a wobble, if I'm honest, but we won't go into too much depth with that. But we hadn't long had my little girl, Charlotte. And I decided just to take a couple of months off and just spend some time with her and regroup, really, and see what I wanted to do. And I ended up going to a football game or a soccer game. And it was a pre-season warm-up, and the game was useless. So I spent more of the game watching the photographers around the outside doing all the sports photography. And I said to a friend of mine, Steve Walters, I said to him, I could do that. And he's like, what? And I said, oh, the photography, I quite fancy that. I quite enjoy having a look. So anyway, the subsequent Christmas, I got a camera at Christmas time, and didn't have the first clue how to use it. Didn't know what aperture meant, didn't know what exposure meant, didn't know how to, I literally didn't know how to do it apart from the big green A button for Canon users out there.
There's other buttons other than the A button? Oh, God.
Well, I don't use them very often. I'm sure they just put there to confuse people. So I played around a little bit and thought I was good at it, you know, and I enjoyed seeing what kind of eye I had, and decided to get myself on a course, which was just an evening class, one night a week.
Like like local community college or something?
Yeah. It was just with the local school college, and it was something like $200 or £200. And it was 10 weeks, and it was the basic, how do you operate a camera, you know? And and that's what I wanted. I just wanted somebody to talk to me like I was a 2-year-old with this amazing bit of kit in my hand and tell me what it did. It wasn't about the creativity side of it. I wasn't fussed on that. I just trusted that I'd find my own route with that. But in terms of technically, what did this button do and what did that button do and what are the implications of moving, you know, these these settings and et cetera, et cetera. And then that was great. And by the end of that 10-week course, I booked my first wedding.
So you were hooked. It was over from there. You were like, 10 weeks, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah. And by about week 5 or 6 of that course, I knew that's what I wanted to do. So then I had a month or two of thinking, because initially I didn't want to do weddings. Initially I was like, that's so uncool. There's no way I'm going to be a wedding photographer. So I wanted to be the rock and roll star that went and did fashion, you know? And I did that. I did a little bit of fashion up in London very early on. And it's about a 4-hour drive from here to London. And I was doing that twice a week, up and back and shooting. But do you know what I found? I thought it was the cool job, you know, because it was, I was in London and it was like you've made it almost before you even have to try. And I just found that when I handed over the images over and got a check for it, I was missing something. And one of the nights I was driving back from London, it was about 11 o'clock at night. I just overthought it a lot and thought, well, what am I not getting from it? Why am I not happy? I've gone to all this work and I've decided what I want to do. And there's a passion inside me that wants to use this camera. Why am I not getting fulfillment from it? And I realized that there was no love involved with handing over the images. It was just a contract. It was just there's the photos, there's a check. There was no, they're amazing. There's no love for it. There was no emotion involved with it in any shape or form, you know? That's what I was missing.
Oh, okay. So I'm starting to say, I want to come back a little bit later to education and workshops, because we are going to talk a little bit about that. But I really want to talk about this because on the, you know, at the entrance of your website that we are going to put in the show notes and Craig's going to share with us, you know, you talk about narrative and story and sharing, and it sounds like love and sharing and connection is really ground into what fulfills you as a photographer and what really, I guess, probably started your interest in it, you know, once we hit week 5 of technical college school there. It sounded like you were really, you know, you really resonated somewhere with the connection and telling something. You just, you know, you started to explore the fashion industry, you started to explore, you know, your weddings. You said you booked your first wedding. So talk to us about, I guess, what the narrative, why the narrative is so important, you know, why that connection and love is so important as opposed to just work for you.
Because it's got to be about the emotion, right? It's as simple as that. If it's just the way that I operate. And I've always had that. And a narrative, I put that narrative on my website, that explanation narrative, only about a year, maybe 18 months ago, because I wanted to just explain to clients that I don't see weddings, you know, shooting 70, 73 this year. It can be very, it could be.
We're coming back to that.
Yeah, okay. It can be very easily construed that it just becomes a factory line, because weddings are weddings, right? Everybody does bridal prep, everybody does the ceremony, everybody does the portraits, everybody does the family mantelpiece photos, and then we wait for speeches and we wait for first dance and then we give big hugs and we say so long, right? And in the main, that's kind of the muscle memory of a wedding. But what I want to do, and I need it for myself as much as I do for the clients, is to put as much emotion into each photo or into each wedding or into each email, if you really want to go down that route, as I humanly possibly can, you know, because it has to be unique to them. It has to be unique. I can't give the same emotion to Juliet and Rob as I can to Josh and Beth. It's a different emotion. It's a different connection. They're different human beings and they have a different story. So I don't necessarily want to tell their story as a novel state. I want to tell it in the emotion from the images and because it's unique to them. If I can capture that in photographs, then my job's done. I fall in love completely. And that's so cliche, but I literally do fall in love every weekend.
Just for any of our listeners, if you book Craig, he just falls in love with you. That's what happens. You pay him and he falls in love with you.
You can buy my love.
buy Craig's love. Go to his website right now. 20% off sale. That's actually one of the first times I've had. I think storytelling has become much bigger, especially in the wedding industry, but also other industries. Street photographers, landscape artists want to talk about, you know, the evolution of an area, quarries that have been dug out and then refit or whatever. Wedding photographers telling unique portions of the day. Very few times do I hear people really going, every photograph needs to have some emotional connection. Not just for the couple, but it sounds like for you, and you know, you didn't really say that explicitly, but you worked your words around. It sounds like you are just 100% invested in creating something so emotional in each photograph that, you know, I think this is probably the underpinning of why you excel so well. So, you know, when you go through a wedding day, what's, you know, what are you looking for, you know, or are you, just kind of observing?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty keen on not thinking out a wedding before I get there in any shape or form. And that's for two reasons, really. One is that I've got a very limited imagination, right? So if I try and think it out, then I end up shooting last week's wedding.
Gotcha.
There's that aspect, which I don't like. And then there's also the aspect of the levels of expectation that I put on myself are so high that I always end up coming away disappointed because I don't know if I'll ever get there. That's not to say that it's the same level of expectations as the clients. They've got very different expectations than I have as a professional and personal, you know? So if I set my own bar really high then and it doesn't quite work out because of the elements that aren't in your control, then you just come away disappointed, and you can't live a wedding like that. So one is you have to go there with a complete open mind to just be trustworthy of yourself technically, and that you trust that you'll see that shot that you want to see. And then secondly, don't set the bar anywhere near where you want it to be, because you come away super impressed with yourself, and that gears you on for the next one. And if you're happy shooting, if you're happy looking at what you're doing and happy editing that photo, then there's an emotion and there's a love going into it because you're personally invested in it, right.
And I think there's something that we should stop and just kind of for our especially our listeners, if you're in the car driving right now listening, Craig kind of just said, you know, don't, you know, try and set everything up, you know, let your intuition take over as an artist. And this can, I think, can apply in all genres of photography. If you try and set up everything, you know, beforehand, you're just going to go shoot last week's wedding, or you might go out and shoot last week's whatever you are, like a street photographer. You might just get the exact same shots. And I think that is, you know, absolutely killer tip right there. It has nothing to do with touching your camera. It's all about premeditating, you know, or lack of premeditating, and just allowing what's going to happen to an extent, and not be too worried about elements that are outside of your control. I know I fall into that trap sometimes. I go, this is such a beautiful location, but the light or the time of day is just not perfect. It's not going to allow me to get what I already envisioned in my head when I had, you know, pre-scouted it or whatever the case was. And I come away completely disheartened, even though I know I've gotten shots or photographs, portraits, whatever, that absolutely will blow the couple away. But to myself, I get down on myself knowing that if the light was just a bit different, it'd be 1,000 times better. And you can't always control that, right, Craig?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I was trying to say. You did it a lot more eloquently than I did.
That's okay.
I know what I'm capable of. Why can't I produce it? And it is. It's because factors are outside your control. Like you said, the light. Or, you know, grandma might have photobombed you and completely ruined that aisle shot. Or, I don't know, the DJ was a bit of an idiot. So, the lighting setup was completely wrong in the first dance. And you end up just finishing the day off on a little bit of a low. There's all these things that you cannot control. You just have to trust in your ability to use your camera as technically proficient as you possibly can to get the desired outlook that you want. I'm rubbish with a camera. in terms of technical. If somebody asks me a technical question about my camera, I've got zero to no idea about how to answer that. I know how I shoot, and I know how the camera reacts when I shoot in certain light conditions, and that's all I need to know, right?
You don't know how it's made, you don't know how to use it.
Exactly.
Okay, and so I guess actually, you know what, talking about that, because I did want to come back, and you said you had taken some technical college, 10-week intro course and whatnot, and we are kind of talking about the technical and understanding your camera. Did you use, like, I guess, you know, our viewers love to hear, especially from very good photographers like yourself, you know, where they grew, I guess, their knowledge and their ability. Like, was there other classes besides the, I guess, in-person classes that you took, like YouTube, Creative Live, workshops, you know, did you ever?
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I think I knew very early on that I wasn't very technically minded with photography at all. But I fell into the trap that I feel so many photographers fall into, which is buy. This bit of kit would change your life, and it would change the whole way you shoot, and it would give you the desired results that you want. And in hindsight, obviously I'm not sponsored by anybody, but I would highly recommend that you don't do that. I just try
you'd be,
and...
You'd be a horrible sponsor if you told them not to buy things.
I know, right? Canon are never going to knock my door because I'm saying don't buy kit. But it's just the way, and these are just my opinions, guys. And there's people out there that just use flash like you wouldn't believe, and it produces incredible results. That's just not me, so I've never really gone down the route of learning flash, and that doesn't mean that I disagree with it. And if you can, Christ, go learn it, you know, invest in the time, and it just gives you another arm to your battery. It just doesn't appeal to me, so I've never really gone down that route. I may pop a little bit of flash on at the first dance just to drag a couple of lights, but other than that, it's all natural light. So I put all my time and effort and resource into learning about light and learning how my camera specifically, just my Canon Mark III, deals with that light, because then that gives me the ultimate control. So yeah, that's in terms of, that's it.
That's cool. That's totally a good tip. And, you know, keeping yourself focused on what you want to actually learn instead of trying to learn everything or buy everything. And then having, you know, the chooser's dilemma where they're sitting there going, I'm going to shoot with this and that and this. And what am I going to do? Or should I buy this flash and that flash?
I just found that another point on it. I just found that it distracted me. I missed moments because I was worried about bits of kit. You know, I shoot with a Canon 50mm, and I don't mean the expensive £600 50mm. It's the £90 1.8. It's the build quality of it. Again, not sponsored by Canon. The build quality of it is shocking. But I love it. I absolutely adore it because of the photos it gives me. It gives me like a softness. It gives me a kind of little bit of a gnarliness, you know?
And we have to stop. I'm going to cut you off because, you know, someone, you know, who's a kit head will just go, whoa, you're not shooting with the 600-pound one, Craig? What is going on here? But listeners, if you are, you know, go to Craig. We're going to give you the website and show notes. Craig's work is mind-blowing. And what, like 50% of that is probably this 50, is it the Nifty 50? Yeah. The
Nifty 50, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah. Half of his work is that, you know, it's mind-blowing. So you now know, you no longer have an excuse to say, well, I need this lens to get a better shot. Craig's doing it, you know, and he's just developed what he loves, and it's happening. Sorry, Craig, keep going. I just wanted to, you know, make sure that our listeners really resonated with them that.
Yeah, and then the other one is just an 85, which is a Canon standard. It's about 4 years old now. Canon standard 2.8, I think. I really don't invest in kit that much. It's not. But then I don't go for this hyper real super sharp approach. It doesn't need to be any sharper.
You'd be like, wait, Craig, are you on ShotKit? You know ShotKit? No. Okay. You'd be like the worst person on ShotKit. No offense.
I think I've been asked.
Have you? You have like, well, I mean, Ian Welding's on there, but he shoots with like super minimalist. He's just on the Fujis. But like yours would just be like the Nifty 50, the 85, and a camera, and you'd be like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, and the only reason I haven't gone on there, because I have been asked, I remember I have been asked, the only reason I didn't do it is because I didn't have a camera to take a picture of the cameras that I used.
So. borrow a camera to take a photo, you know, of your...
I need to make friends.
Or you need to, you know, take a photo of just the lenses, and then you can just later Photoshop in your camera. But I wouldn't tell anyone that you did that, you know?
Yeah, I don't use Photoshop.
Ian Welding's shot kit is just like his Fuji and a flash, because he just uses one lens the whole day.
I'd kind of like to do that. I'd love to rock up with just one camera and my 50, but I don't know. There's that little, with a wedding, it's that little bit more. Sometimes you need to just get in a little bit tighter to be able to get the shot. And that's why I carry the two, which is the 50 and the 85. But very rarely do you see me with anything apart from the 50 on, apart from maybe during the speeches and possibly during the ceremony a little bit. But that's it. And maybe if I want to drop it out a little bit.
So you literally just roll up with like, is you just have to bring one camera body and the two lenses and like one flash, and then you're just done for the day? You're just like, that's what I'm going to do?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's awesome. I think I had gotten it down to something I was super happy with. And it was like, you know, I have the old 24, which is this tiny little lens. And then like a 35, the 85. And I have a 45 tilt shift, and that's all I've got. And then I have a flash.
Used to have the 45 tilt shift and absolutely adored it. And then I ended up shooting a whole wedding with a 45 tilt shift, manual focus, just because I thought it was pretty cool. And it did rock, but I thought that's not fair. I can't do that anymore. So I literally started leaving it at home.
Yeah, I love it, but you have to be very selective, for sure.
You really do. And for somebody like me, I'm like, no, I'll use it all day.
Okay, so to come off, you know, the gearhead and worst sponsorship member of Craig George ever.
I'm devastated. I've just realized that I'm never going to ever get sponsorship money.
Not with that many lenses, man. But talk to us, I guess, because, you know, we were talking a little bit about education, talking a little bit about gear and how you want to set up your day to capture emotional images. I do know that you have a workshop in the tunnel that you're doing over in the UK. Why don't you kind of just prep us a little bit on that? Because I'm sure some of our listeners would be interested.
Yeah, I don't want it to be a plug. That's not why.
I genuinely want to know about it so that maybe I can convince my wife to let me go. So,
okay. So just very briefly then, it's 2 days in late October, 22nd, 23rd, I think. We're going to do it in a really cool old cinema, which is a bit dirty and a bit shit kickerish, and just it'll have full of emotion. But essentially what I'm doing and is I've just designed that a little bit of a program that says what I do. And I think it works, obviously. So I've just said from trying to attract clients all the way up to delivering final product. And we do a little bit of a shoot in there on the second day as well, so you can do a live edit. But it covers absolutely everything that my business is built around and the processes that I use and the little tips that I use on social media and for shooting and for client acquisition. And, you know, just I hate to use the cliche of thinking outside the box, but I try and do that a lot. I try and forget my muscle memory when it comes to shooting, and certainly when it comes to business, I try and think, well, why can't it be done that way? Just because the norm is, I hate that muscle memory of life, you know? So I always try and change it up a little bit, because you never know if it works or not, and it's better to have a play than not. So the workshop just covers everything that I do, from social marketing, from building relationships and how to build relationships with people that are going to bring you business in the first place. Because I have at least 15 or 20 of those that I can immediately call on or reel off now that I consider to be close friends now because we've been working that long. But they also supply me with 4, 5, 6, 7 weddings each a year. So, yeah, I don't I very rarely pay for any advertising. If I pay for advertising, it's because I want to know more about it, like Instagram ads or Facebook ads. It's because I want to learn about it a little bit more and see if it's going to be a process that I can put into place in the future. But that's the only thing I do right now. So it's about building your champions initially, all the way through to delivering your final product at the end, and treating your clients the same at the end as you do at the beginning. You know that super excited that you get when you get an inquiry and you reply to them within about 3 seconds.
Yeah, you're all sketchy fingers. You're like all over the place.
Yeah, it's like. But then the one that's already booked, right? The one that you're 6 months away from doing, you're kind of like, I'll get back to them in a couple of days. It's just changing that ethos that if you treat a client the same from day one, there won't be an end, essentially. And if you're treating them just as well at the end, then they're always going to shout about you. They're always going to refer on to you. And
that is,
you never know where work's going to come from. So.
And I think that's a really big lesson for especially for a lot of our listeners who are going from 0 to 10 as opposed to 0 to 100. Getting that starting blocks, especially if you're starting photography to one day make money from it. You know, some of our listeners don't. They just want to know how to become better photographers. But, you know, we do know that a lot do want one day to run a business, and that is an important lesson. It's just making sure you take care of people regardless if you can help them or not. It takes me 3 minutes if I'm already booked to put a message out to say, you know, these people aren't booked because I've just messaged them to see who's available. So here's three that I love. Go message them. They're available. They'll be happy to talk with you if you like their work.
But those three guys that you're thinking of, those ones that you're going to refer to,
They refer back.
They've looked after you, right? So it takes effort. It's not a take game. It's got to be. There's a good chap that I follow. He's out in New York. I don't know if you've heard of him, Gary Vaynerchuk.
Public speaker.
Yeah, I listen to a lot of what he says, and one of his biggest rules that I've taken away from him is that 51-49. You give 51% of what you get, and then you just keep 49% for yourself. And if you work on that ethos of giving more than you receive, then you'll always have enough. You know, you'll always have enough for the table. So I pretty much base my life around that.
That is so cool. Craig, tell me about, you're at the forefront of like massive travel wedding destination photography, which is, you know, quite a popular thing in our industry right now. But talk to me a little bit about, you know, where you think photography is going. Like, do you have any crazy ideas? We don't hear much from the UK population on what the crazy stuff's happening. So where do you think it's going? Where are our new photographers? Where should they focus their eyes?
Italy.
Italy? Just go hang it. Everyone move to Italy. We're all going to move to Italy tomorrow.
Everybody, put all your marketing effort into Italy. It's where it is going to happen over the next. It's happening now. But France has been the thing for the last 4 years, I'd say, with people, especially from the UK or the English-speaking market. So I cover mainly couples from the UK, but there's also a lot of Americans. There's also a lot of Canadians that come over, and I do their weddings, and obviously English-speaking that come over from Dubai. But France is kind of, it's not going to die, and it'll certainly keep going for the next 5 or 10 years. But in terms of the boom, it's Italy. It's coming huge. So if you've got a marketing budget that you want to spend on trying to find, or an effort, not spend necessarily, but you've got a marketing strategy that you want to put into place, focus it on Italy for destination weddings. It's massive. It's going to be huge. It's the next boom.
Neat. Okay. I wouldn't have thought Italy. That would have been like, we're so isolated here in North America. To some extent. Okay. What about what do you think camera gear is going to look like in the next 5 years or so? Like where do you think it's going?
Oh, I dread to think. I honestly do. well, Canon have just announced the new Mark IV. A little plug there for Canon. If you do fancy sponsoring me, this has become a bit of a thing now. I never thought about sponsorship before, but we may as well tap into it. Canon has just brought out the new Mark IV, which has got the dual processing RAW, I think it's called.
The pixel shift.
The pixel shift, which means that we can refocus our images after
taking
the shot.
I wonder how far, though. Like, you couldn't shoot something at a meter away and then expect the thing 20 meters away to be shifted in pixels. That would seem just crazy.
I don't know, and because I see, I haven't seen the technology work in real life yet, and I haven't seen images before and after, then I can't really comment on it. But I think there's going to be a lot to do with this VR. Is it the virtual reality?
Yeah.
I think there'll be a huge market for that, certainly within the wedding videography, but I'm sure the photography would get pulled into that as well. You know, you've got 360 views all over social media at the moment. It's, I don't think you can ever replace the photographer. I've got to believe that, right? But I do worry about where it's going and how accessible it is becoming to the general public to take an amazing photo if you know how to use that camera well. So it, that kind of leads me nicely back to where you were saying earlier on about putting, you've got to stamp out your style beginning early on because you can't, that can't be replicated, right? Your style can't be copied, no matter what people have got in their hands. So
that is a big lesson I think Ray and I try to touch on, especially in our weekly newsletters, is finding your style and what actually drives you. I know when I first started, you know, 4 years ago, I didn't have style. I had styles from like six other photographers. I'd be all over the place, editing and also posing. And, you know, that was... that was good because it helped me identify the things that I didn't like later. And I think that's just as important as being able to organically on your own find your style. And I think a lot of our listeners are at that stage where they're starting to now develop their own style by exclusion or, you know, removing things that they don't like.
Yeah.
And I think this is just a perfect segue because my next question for you, Craig, was going to be, you know, if you could go back in time to young Craig, you know, and say, you know, Craig, don't grow out your beard. It's way too long. It'll be way too long. You know,
it's just like, no.
Dude, that would take me 400 years to grow.
No.
Not even fair. You know, if you could go back to the start, you know, when you were first walked into your 10-week course, give yourself some tips or, you know, a lesson, you know, what would you give to yourself?
Well, necessarily that I'd change or just
anything, man, anything you change or anything that you'd like to give yourself inspiration. What would you pass on to young Craig?
I would, you know, I've got two little rules that govern me from day to day, and that is try and work harder than the next man. Not out of a bolshy or a condescending way, or I need that's my goal, right? And hopefully then the rewards then come after that. If I'm prepared to work harder than the next man, then life will give me lemons. And the other one is just put as much emotion into what you're doing as humanly possible. That's it. And it took me a long time. It took me an awfully long time to realize that in the early on days. I tried to, like you said, I was exactly the same as you. I looked at five different people and I was the same as them, right? But then you copy those shots because at that stage of your career or that stage of your technical ability, you want to prove to yourself that you can take that photo because it's a learning, it's a technical learning rather than a brand learning, if you like. And when I mean brand learning, that's what I annotate to your style because it's your brand, right? So when you start out, you see a nice little off camera flash shot and you think, well, I'd like to be able to do that. I'll go and buy a flash and I'll buy some triggers and I'll shoot because I need to recreate that. You're not carving out your style then. You're emulating a technique, but you're learning yourself because you've got passion and you've got desire and ambition to go and create those types of photos. And then, like you said earlier on, you suddenly realize, oh, I don't like the off-camera flash. I was just proving to myself that you realize in hindsight, I was just proving to myself that I didn't want to do that really, but I could. I can now take that shot and I can tick that box and I can move on. I think as a photographer, you've got to have that process, but I'm waffling now a little bit, but I would just say, carry on, forget, just work as hard as you can. and always have a value. It doesn't have to be monetary value, but always have a, that's the advice I give to myself. Recognize the value in everything that you're doing. And if there's no value in it, don't do it. So, you know, I might take a job in New York and only make £400 off it. But you know what? I get to put on my website that I've been to New York and I've got this amazing shoe. But I only made £400 of it. But do you know what? It's not the value of it. I might even do it at cost. I might just say to a couple, look, cover my costs so I can go and shoot New York. But the value of it is that it expands my brand. It expands me as a destination wedding photographer because I display it on my website beautifully. And I obviously, we're talking the fact that you go out there and you do a good job. But there's a value in it to me, which is, you know, I don't want to do it four times a year at cost because then you're not making any money off it. And, you know, only the first once or twice you really want to do it. But I don't know, sitting in a room for 2 days and carving out some personal emails to people that you've never met, but you hunt them down on Facebook, you stalk them and find out what's important to them and then put that into an email that's so personal, this person is like, whoa, how do they know me? And that person might be a planner, but then you've got their attention, and then you are different to the 50 other photographers out there that have said, hey, I'd love to work with you, I love your work. And they haven't really looked at it. They've probably got a different name in the address bar. It might take a day to put that email together, but the value of it is that planner, she or he or...
You're on their radar.
So, yeah. But you put that work in. So it's working harder than the next man, but identifying what the potential value is in it for you and weighing that up then and seeing if it's worthwhile doing. That's what I didn't realize in the beginning.
That's amazing advice, and there's so many things there early on that I think I'm on the same page, and I think a lot of our viewers who are kind of going through that stage right now in their journey with photography will absolutely notice. And I think that's kind of like, even for myself, that's a massive lesson, is that I need to spend less time being worried about whether I'm going to nail something all the time, and more time about going, what is the thing I love in my work that I want to do all the time? And going out there and just giving that to couples, because that'll be the authenticity at the end of the day that they love. But I do want to segue a little bit, only because I want to be super mindful of your time. Craig, why don't you go ahead, let all of our listeners know where they can find you online, and so we can also add them to the show notes.
Okay, so I'm on Facebook, and really naughtily, I only use my personal page on Facebook. I don't use a business page. I have got one just in case Facebook come knocking, but it's just Craig George Photography. You'll be able to find me on there. I'm on Instagram just as Craig George. I'm on Twitter as C George Weddings and on Snapchat as C George Weddings. And that's about it, really. And my website is obviously craig-george.com.
Perfect. I'm going to put all those in the show notes for our listeners who need to, well, they should be checking out your website, because, you know, it's just like, it's the pinnacle of being able to show that you can shoot on an, you know, the nifty 50 for all of your weddings and, you know, be mind blown. I'd be like, no, that's 1.2. You know, that's the more expensive 50 mil. Nope, just a nifty 50. And I think that just speaks to your work and how well you understand light and emotion and framing things, you know, in your own style. But I do want to be mindful of your time. You've been an amazing guest, Craig. I think our listeners are going to have a lot out of this episode, and they're going to have a lot of questions.
Then get in touch, by all means. That's the reason why I use the Facebook personal pages, because we can become friends rather than just likes, which I'm not really buying into. So yeah,
he just wants likes from Canon sponsorships, but
if Canon wants to sponsor me, then I'm all ears. But
are we open to like other like Nikon, Fuji systems, no, or you only take Canon right now?
At the moment I only take Canon right now, and if they can't afford to give me a new £90 50 mil for the season, then I'm obviously doing something wrong.
Maybe we can have an Indiegogo crowdfund for you.
Let's do it.
Get you a new one when you break that one. All right, Craig, I want to thank you for your time. I'm sure our listeners had a great time listening to this episode. And we can't wait to see your seven weddings in 10 days extravaganza on social media. So if you're not following Craig, you need to get over there and do that right frickin' now. Unless you're driving, don't do anything while driving except driving.
Don't snap drive.
Yeah, pull over, add Craig, and then start driving again. All right, man. I want to thank you. I hope you have a great time and stay sane on the road.
Callum, I got to say, I think that you rocked it on that interview. It was really good. I think that you asked a lot of great questions about, you know, a lot of things like what it's like to be a wedding photographer and then or what it's like to be a destination wedding photographer. And then on the backside, how much of a philosophy Craig has on shooting weddings, despite how many weddings he shoots. When he said that he shoots 70 weddings, I was like, no, that's absolutely crazy, especially for a destination wedding photographer who's traveling all day, every day. Like, I mean, I wish that we got a little bit more into his personal life just because there's like this romanticized feeling about being a destination wedding photographer. Everybody thinks that it's just like this awesome vacation and, you know, you can just relax. You get there a day before, you relax, you shoot for a few hours, and then the day after you relax again, like by the pool and by the beach. But I mean, when Craig said that he had to rent a car and drive 10 hours to show up to a wedding and then shoot for another, you know, another 10 or 12 hours at that wedding, exhausted, I was like, no, thanks. I'll stick to my local market. Yeah, I mean, that is really a lot of work to be putting in. So props to him. That is absolutely incredible. And again, his work is just, you know, it's very unique. It's uniquely his own work. It's really great. And again, Callum, I think that you did a great job interviewing Craig. What was your biggest takeaway, man?
Ooh, that one? You know, it's the theme of the summer for me, man. It's that, like, you know, I need to worry less about gear. It just seems somehow like I come away from every other podcast going, don't give a shit about my gear. Don't give a crap. You know, the way I use and bend and work light and max out the capabilities of what I currently have will define me as a photographer less if I go chasing, you know, some brand new camera system or gear. I think that's becoming such, you know, so prevalent now that, you know, with the Fuji X-T2s being dropped and stuff, like, you can just have this slim little thing and shoot and you're golden. As I get packing now, we're in the, you know, we're being 8 weeks away from, you know, going on a 5-month trip in a van. Space is limited, so it's valuable. So the lens has to give me, you know, the camera body has to give me a very compelling argument. I'm just, you know, I'm going through all my gear right now and I'm like, I don't need this. I don't need that. You know, I think I'm down to like, just, I think I'm down to my 750, my X100T, and then some lenses for the 750. And I think that's going to be it, man. It's going to be like super simple, super small, compact, maybe like one flash just in case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, being light, that's about the biggest piece of my, my kit. Is just the amount of flashes that I bring. If it was just my camera and my lenses, I could just bring it all in a messenger bag. But, you know, it just comes with the territory. I know what you mean, though, about, you know, packing light, being small. And, I mean, you got it right. It's got to be hard packing everything in this RV as you guys are driving around and just making sure that everything has a purpose and is, you know, going to be performing is, you know, got to be a daunting task for you.
It is, man, and we are, you know, every day, it's not even just camera gear, but clothes and, you know, the other everyday essentials. But, you know, with that said, we are busy people, and I've actually got to get back to planning some of that route. And I know you have a little one who wants some attention from Dad.
Two, always. I really wish that I could have, you know, talked to you, Craig. It was a great interview. You know, you really provided a lot. And again, if any of you listeners out there have any questions about anything that Callum and Craig talked about in the episode, head over to beginnerphotographypodcast.com where you can check out all the links, check out some of Craig's work, go to his website. It's awesome. His Instagram is super good. My baby is screaming. We're going to get going. Callum, until next week.
Take it easy.
Later, man.